DeathRowProds.com, Anything Cast, here on All Games Radio. I am your host, Deadman, Joe. Today we have Bogeyman.
Hello.
And special guest from The Escapist, Greg Carter.
Hi.
Hey, Greg, how you doing, man? It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm not doing too badly. And yourself?
Not too bad. I'm having myself a nice, kind of an eventful Canada Day. Because Two Americans is, in fact, Canada Day.
That means the birthday of Canada, I believe.
Yes.
The day we officially became our own country.
It is the 4th of July for Canadians.
Just 3 days early.
Yes. So, first. Not in terms of year, but yeah. It's good enough for first. But yeah. So, Greg, what have you been up to?
Sorry, hold on just 1 second. I'm having a few technical issues here.
And starting out
those.
And starting out the show as we always do with a banner hit of technical issues.
So porn.
Yes, porn.
Let's talk about how Deadman's not going to get his blowjob.
Yes. So last week on the show we talked about Team BJNBA, some hashtag thing that was started on Twitter. So porn stars Angelina Castro and Sarah J were offering blowjobs to all their followers if the Miami Heat won some basketball tournament thing. And they won. And so, they have released a set of rules for collecting your BJs. I have them right in front of me. So, number one, members of Angelina Castro's official site and Sarah J's official site as of August 1st are first in line based on length of membership. If any member of the Heat or the coaching staff shows up, they're next in line as long as they are followers. Whoever's a follower who shows up in a I Love Sarah J or Once You Go Hispanic, You Don't Panic or Sarah J's UC Tits shirt is next in line. Anyone who shows up in a Team BJNBA shirt is next in line. Anyone with an official Miami Heat shirt, next in line. And it just goes on from there. And one of the things is, you have to have a confirmed test from a talent agency at your own expense. So you have to pay to get tested, and then you can go up and have the BJs from the people who... And you're probably going to be like 275th in line. So you're just going to be...
You should tell them the one that really kills your hope of getting a blowjob.
You have to be in Miami. They are not traveling. They're not going anywhere. They're just setting up some convention center in Miami. Just having the guys line up, go into a back room, and they're going to film everything. And then sell it. So, yeah. Apparently, they're also going for a world record. Apparently, like, the world record for number of blowjobs given in a single day was, like, 249. So, they're going to try to break that.
That sounds like a noble endeavor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're gonna be as soon as like they knock her off, and then they're gonna, next thing you know, they're gonna go for like the biggest gangbang. Just knock them out one by one. But yeah, so that sucks.
So unfortunately, Deadman cannot get his blowjob.
Damn it! Foiled again. Yeah. Yeah, so great. What you been up to?
Sorry, could you repeat that, please?
Just what have you been up to since we last talked to you?
All right, I seem to be having some crazy bandwidth issues here. I'm getting like one word in three.
Okay, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I just penned my first professional review, The Escapist, of Gravity Rush.
Oh yeah.
How'd
that go?
Not too bad. It's harder than I thought it would be, but we got the review out there. It's on Metacritic, which is fun to see.
Yeah. I know how hard it is to write reviews. Like, I am still trying to write one for Lone Survivor. I've had that game for, like, 2 weeks now. It really sucks. It's like, I got that game during E3. So I was doing everything I could to like try to get like secondhand coverage of E3. But just trying to get that and play the game to review it, it is a bitch.
Now you can see why I post infrequent and short reviews.
Oh yeah, like Bowen's reviews are usually like less than half the length of myself and former Psych contributor Shax. Because oh yeah, by the way, we found out, figured out what happened to Shax. He quit.
Oh, for some very, very fucking asshole twat reasons. But we'll get to that in a bit.
Yes, and I'm not even sure if we should get into it because with Gray here, I don't feel like we should be airing out our dirty laundry in front of the guest.
Good point. We'll save this for next week.
Yeah, so your first review.
Yep.
So is this going to become like a regular thing for you? Could be brightened up more reviews for the Escapist?
I believe so, yeah. We're mostly doing kind of the second tier kind of less popular games, I think. Mm-hmm. Since we don't really have access to video equipment, so we can't do video reviews.
Okay.
So, you know, basically, if it's small and no one really gives a shit about it, I'll probably be covering
it. So, you know, the really important games.
Well, yeah, the editors get to choose who reviews what, and naturally, being gamers, they tend to, like, tilt the balance in their favor, I've noticed.
So it's like in Critical Miss, like just you, it's like they're just going choose all the good shit. It's like here you get Cooking Mama.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about Blue Rose of Ilium. This is something you just released recently on the Escapist. You're working it with I think Henry Huang, and it was a Mass Effect 3 based comic.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. So what made you want to let me do that? Just a it's like, we're playing Mass Effect, you saw this thing, it's like, oh, cool, I'll write something about this.
It was a very well-written game moment. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was kind of frustrated that Mass Effect 3 did so much right, and it did one thing wrong, and that was, like, the last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to kind of overrule everything else.
Yeah, it's always a thing. Like, game can have like the thing with like everything of like people always remember somebody for the worst thing they did.
Yeah, and as you know, aside from that ending, I think it was an expertly written game, and probably certainly I think the best in the Mass Effect series, and it's up there with the better games kind of BioWare have made.
Yeah, so for the people out there who like don't know like what part of the game did you base this on?
It's a kind of small side quest in I've forgotten what the planet's called, but it's the one with all the insect creatures. And it's only like 5 minutes long, if that, but probably one of the most emotional moments of the game.
Okay. So you care to get any more you deal with it, because I haven't actually played Mass Effect 3. So I have no idea. I have no idea what this is. It's just, hey, it's a Krogan, but he's a nice guy, kind of.
Have you played Mass Effect 2?
Yes, I have.
You know the Krogan poet you come across on, I think it's Ilium?
Oh, it has been a while since I played
he's
Mass
singing,
Effect.
Yeah, it's been a while singing since, to his girlfriend.
It's been a while since I played Mass Effect 2, and I have a terrible memory. And it could have been one of those things that just kind of missed.
It was a small quest. It was easy to miss.
Like, that game wasn't actually mine. It was my root. It was one of the guys I was living with, and like by the time I was getting to the end of it, it was like near the end of the year, and everyone was leaving, so he needed the game back. So I just kind of had to go through and try to finish it. I lost two guys. It was real shit, too. Like, I lost Miranda and Tally, I think. Yeah. So, Warrior Poet.
Say again?
So, Warrior Poet. This is totally...
Okay. I actually can't... I really can't understand what's going on here. My connection is fucking terrible.
Yeah. Another quality podcast from Desk Over Oz.
I assume that's on my end, but I can't figure out what's causing it.
Anyway, so just the warrior poet Krogan.
Yeah, it could just be the internet being grumpy. I don't know.
So yeah, let's talk about this warrior poet. Like, why did you choose? So you said it was like the best thing, but what made it one of your, in your opinion, were the best written parts of that game?
It was just it just kind of exemplified kind of BioWare's approach to character writing, where it's there's always an edge of humor to it. And I think if you look at all the best BioWare characters, they're all quite funny characters.
Yeah.
And you've got, like, in Knights of the Old Republic, you've got the robot dude, who I've forgotten the name of, but he's incredibly funny.
HK-47? Morden.
Yeah, that's right. And if you go a bit further back to kind of when they were, kind of Baldur's Gate era, you've got kind of Minsk, who's probably the best character in Baldur's Gate, and he's, again, a very funny character. And I think Char just kind of exemplified that. They take something quite typical, which is like the sci-fi warrior race, and they kind of turn it on its head, and it worked. It was one of the better moments of the game.
Cool. So what made you write this what made you have contact Henry to do the art for this comic instead of having Gray do the art? I mean, not Gray, Corey. You're Gray.
Corey? Well, I think they both have their own kind of expertise. And Corey's very good at kind of funny artwork. I don't think he's as good as at action scenes.
Okay.
Whereas Henry's kind of the opposite. So, and I'd worked with Henry previously on a guest strip for Critical Miss.
Yeah.
And so we just decided to give it a shot, and it worked out incredibly well, I think.
Okay, cool. Could you see this becoming like a regular thing? Like every once in a while, you'll find some game that you feel like there's a part that you really like, and just writing a little comic about it.
Yeah, I can't kind of confirm anything yet, but I have been talking to the Escapist about doing a few more based on different games.
Cool.
And it kind of just remains to be seen if they'll be as well received as the Mass Effect one was.
Okay, cool. So stay tuned for that, people. EscapistMagazine.com. Yeah. So Bobby, how have you been?
I've been good, and I gotta say, speaking of Critical Miss, last time I spoke with Gray, I hadn't read any of it yet. I've now read a ton of that comic, and I gotta say, for a while I was quite addicted until I ran out and caught up.
I'm glad you liked it.
Overall, yeah, I must say it is quite funny and entertaining. I really enjoy reading it, and I'm constantly lonely without it. I'm not kissing ass at all.
Yes. Well, Bubby, you got a little bit of shit in your nose, but moving on.
Moving on, yeah.
But yeah, it's Canada. It's Canada Day in Canada here today. Because I know at least 2/3 of us are in Canada. So, Bubby, have you been drinking?
I have not been drinking yet.
You failed me.
It's going to come immediately after this podcast.
Oh, come on. Drink during it. The last one went so well. When you were drunk.
I don't have anything with me right now to drink. But I will be drinking tonight, just not yet. I have so far had an uneventful Canada Day, unfortunately. I played a very strange Left 4 Dead 2 mutation, which I must say, I'm getting a bit annoyed because they've offered us a fan-made patch and a fan-made DLC for months now, and we haven't seen anything of that.
Okay.
Because all they're doing is they're just converting it from PC to Xbox, but haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. Derek was just asking what Canada Day is. I guess he was not listening before.
Yeah. I assume he's
Canada's
never...
Independence Day. I just Independence assume... from the same people, Derek!
Yeah, we just kept in touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Leopard of Two Mutation.
Yeah, basically it's survival. It's all special infected, lots of special infected. But, with the exception of the tank and the spitter, if you get incapped by a special infected, you get back up.
Okay.
But there's also no gloves on anything, and, there's a really thick fog, so you can't really see the special infected coming. So yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's pretty fun, and I've actually managed to set some pretty good records.
Okay, cool.
And no, I must say, Canada Day unfortunately has nothing to do with 1812, as is being discussed in the chat, because of Dead Man mentioning 1812.
Yeah, he said he didn't remember any Canadian wars, so I mentioned that one. We kicked their asses at a preemptive celebration.
And we got, Derek, we didn't get our independence by killing people, we got our independence by just being so damn nice.
Yeah.
Britain was eventually like, okay, you can have your independence. It's yours.
Yeah. Well, great. If you're confused about what's happening, we have, if on All Games, the site that hosts these things live, they have a chat. So we're just... We talk a lot to the chat. Yeah. So yeah, Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, well, I'm having fun with it since the mutation came out. Normally, I don't play online much with people, but it hasn't gone horribly.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I've just been spending like the last like 3 days just so. Whenever I like get a, whenever I like find a song or something, I usually end up like spamming myself with it. I just like listen to it over and over and over again, and that's happened recently with this guy. Ron on YouTube, it's a Hi I'm Ron, but it's like all in word, and he does like these really weird video game raps, but they're like video game gangster raps. Like they had one, like they did one for Mario, where like the entire thing, every once in a while they cut away from like the actual video to go show like gameplay, but it's like modded GTA 4 gameplay with all the Mario characters as GTA 4 characters. So you had, like, Mario running around with his big-ass mustache, but he's in a red suit. You had Luigi going around, but he's in, like, a leather jacket and a hoodie with a green, like, with a green toque on. Yoshi was just an Asian guy with green hair. A Toad was, like, a black guy with, like, a baseball cap on and just high on mushrooms all the time. And they're pretty good raps. Like, the choruses usually, like, lose something for me. But most of them are pretty good. Like, the first one I heard was the Zelda one. And it was really weird, like so I know pretty much nothing about Zelda, aside from, like, Hey Listen. But, like, the Zelda rap, Epona, which I'm guessing is the horse, is just a motorcycle with Epona spray painted on the side of it. And it's really cool. They're really good raps. And to Mr. Atari, no, Canada would not lose to France.
And I'm overall getting, much annoyed with this, because there's this whole thing about saying that our history involves no fighting. So, yes, we do have a full-day holiday, by the way. Mm. America always says, you know, we won World War II for you guys. No, you joined last because of an unrelated reason, and offered much less to the main front. World War I was pretty much the same.
Yeah. Even less so actually. I remember with World War I, like, America didn't join for like the last 6 months of the war.
Also, there were not really any real Allied victories in World War I, despite the fact we won overall. Germany just got tired of fighting. The only battle we won was Vimy Ridge. That was a Canadian battle.
Yeah. We whipped ass.
And yes, we chose not to fight for our independence, but it's been argued. I really wish I could bring it up, but I would have to leave the chat because of Mac. Basically, it worked out better for our economy, and it would have honestly been a better option had America done the same thing. It would have saved a lot of lives and been much better for your economy back then.
Okay. Like, great. Just question for you. Where do you live, actually? Like, not specifically, but, like, country-wise? Okay. Oh boy, technical issues. Don't you just love them?
Oh. No, Derek, what I was saying was not that America didn't win World War II.
Okay.
I've done that before.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, in response to your question, I'm from England. I'm currently living in BC, Canada.
Okay, so you aren't Canada. Are you celebrating Canada Day?
I'm doing my best to ignore Canada Day, in fact.
Okay. Because
how unpatriotic!
Because you're British?
I just kind of enjoy being grumpy and unpleasant. So, pissing on that parade is always fun.
So you're just like the Grinch of your area, just like every single holiday is like, bah humbug, fuck off, I'm trying to be lonely.
Pretty much.
You just Easter, you're just like going around leaving like rotten eggs everywhere. No, actually, you're just leaving the wrappers. Like you go out find like the night before, find every single chocolate egg every parent has planted, and then just eat all the chocolate, but leave all the wrappers behind. Just to fuck with them.
You know what, Mr. Atari? I'm not even going to argue that right now. What Canada does when they hear the word "fight" is start kissing America's ass. It's more like the one thing you're missing, though, is that America's starting all the fights right now. But that is true. We do currently suck. That is a problem with our current government. But don't say this is what our country has always been.
And Derek actually asked an interesting question, which is, I'm guessing, a follow-up to last week's question, is what is the prison bitch hierarchy between the UK, the US, and Canada?
Ooh.
Yeah, so, great, since you're the only actual UK guy here, let me take a stab at this question first.
Sorry, what was the exact question?
What's the prison bitch hierarchy between the UK, the US, and Canada?
To be honest, I'm not really all that sure how Canada fits into things. it's unfortunate to say, but kind of in the UK, we kind of just see it as the most northern reach of America.
Great, damn it. Everyone's
kind of the largest state kind of thing.
That is bullshit, man. We're not part of America.
And you know what? To be quite honest, that is what it's becoming, because we have more and more idiotic governments coming to power who want us to completely rely on America. None of them have ever focused on us having independence from them, not recently at least. And yes, that is what we're becoming, but it's not what we are. Yeah. It's definitely not what the citizens are.
We are Canadian. It's Tim Hortons and weed for everybody. Especially out in BC.
As for the UK, we've kind of been sucking at the teat of the States for far too long, I think.
Okay, so guessing from this thing, it'd be Canada, UK, then US.
Wait, is that bottom to top?
Yeah. Just from what Gray says, like, we are, like while we are not... We are below UK, because like I'm guessing UK looks down on us because, you know, Canadians and what have you and independence and all that. And then UK above us, and then America because, yeah.
I think in terms of actual relevance, the UK is way behind Canada in kind of, on any kind of metric.
We're not talking about relevance here. We're talking about which one, if... Let's say all three, let's say UK, US, and Canada were people. They went to prison. Who would be the most likely to be raped? That's the prison bitch hierarchy.
You know what? One thing I'm going to say in our defense for the prison bitch thing is that America actually kind of cares if we like them. Not on a citizen level, on a government level. They actually care about getting along with our government.
Okay. So, they'd be less likely to rape us then?
Yeah, because you don't rape the ones you want to like you.
Oh, then I've been doing this all wrong.
Then again, I'm going to say that no one in this podcast or in this chat room has enough of a political mind to be saying these things definitively.
Oh, hell no.
That includes myself.
I'm just working off this thing like a Talia Axis Powers level of just going with those characters and trying to see who would be raping like that.
Well then, America wouldn't notice Canada enough to rape him.
Yes, we'd be the ones in the background. And then South Korea would be all pissed off because they don't get to be in the raping. Yeah. Derek says to the escapist guy, the escapist guy's like, what the fuck did I get myself into?
The thing is, he's said it before.
Yeah, he's been on one of our podcasts before, like that one we just spent a lot of time talking about Minecraft penises. I feel like this might be a step up from that.
A step sideways.
Yes. A very shaky step sideways on a very sticky floor.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Gray, how do you feel about Christmas then?
It keeps beating at me with bloody...
See, this is the funny part. I actually quite like Christmas because so many people don't like it.
So what, you're the nega Grinch of you hate every other holiday but love Christmas?
I find like whenever the Christmas period, which starts at around August, begins to kind of roll in, right? The first thing that actually happens, it isn't Christmas adverts, it's people complaining about Christmas adverts. And the adverts appear. And I'm not actually sure which is more irritating.
I have to say the people complaining about it.
Yeah, it's a really worn out joke that people just keep on going to, and it's the gift that keeps on giving as far as they're concerned. It's boring.
Yeah. It's like everything they're complaining about, everyone already knows and accepts as actual fact about these things, but they feel the need to just like reiterate stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like the guys who...
Go ahead.
This is probably a very bad analogy. It's like those people who keep reminding you that the tomato is actually a fruit.
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
I'm just like, yeah, we know it, but it doesn't fucking matter. We can't do anything about it.
Except people don't think there's any kind of moral superiority in giving... In thinking of tomatoes as fruit.
Some people do.
Well, I imagine some people do.
And some people are like, oh, yes, it's actually a fruit! And they swirl their glass of brandy and walk away.
But yeah, I don't mind Christmas. It's an excuse to be nice to people and get drunk. I don't really see much of a problem with that.
Since we're on holidays and we're talking about the differences between Canada and America, Thanksgiving, why do we have that?
I don't know, actually.
I'm not even sure what Canadian Thanksgiving celebrates, to be honest.
I remember now. It was actually on How I Met Your Mother. It was a guy was trying to like trek across some place but failed. So now we celebrate that as a holiday.
So it's an ode to failure, in other words. It's very Canadian.
Pretty much.
I know American one is mostly about Americans celebrating the fact they killed all the natives, which is impressive.
Yeah.
You Canadians killed your fair share of natives too.
Oh yeah.
Point this out pretty much every year. Someone always posts Canadian Thanksgiving, a time of year for celebrating another country's achievements. We killed plenty of natives too. Don't worry, we were right with you on that one.
We had schools about that shit.
Mm. I was very surprised to find, you know, everyone kind of sees Canada as this very nice, polite kind of society. And you guys were dicks to the natives.
we really were.
On an unprecedented scale.
Smallpox blanket.
Hey, we're nice. We didn't say we weren't racist. Yeah, like, one thing I want to know about American Thanksgiving is, why do you guys have to have dinner at 2 p.m.? Like, that's a thing, actually. Like, Americans, they have to have Thanksgiving, they have to have Thanksgiving dinner at 2 p.m.
They do?
Yes, that is actually a thing. I've seen that. Every single thing, like, a lot of things I've seen about American Thanksgiving have been, like, them sitting down at 2 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day for dinner.
Americans, in the chat, answers, please.
Yeah, come on, Mr. Atari, let's hear you. Probably something about, we have it at 2 p.m. because it celebrates our freedom.
Freedom!
Yeah, or something rural American. So apparently the 2 p.m. thing is a dirty myth made up by Canadians. Yes, like, oh, they have, they have their Thanksgiving 2 months after us because they suck that much, and instead 2 p.m.
Derek, what you're not understanding about what you just said is we're getting this from television and movies.
Yes,
Canada doesn't make television and movies. You do.
Yeah, like, our last big contribution to television was Rural Canadian Air Farce. And even that, not
I
really.
I would argue Corner Gas.
Well, our last, like, really, really big one, Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
That was the thing that was like, all right, we made our mark. Now what do we do? I don't know. It's like we peaked really early with like Michael J. Fox in the 80s, then we had like Jim Carrey, and now just kind of nothing. It's like, hey, Justin Bieber.
Yeah, now we're producing horrible atrocities like Nickelback and Justin Bieber.
Yeah. Oh god.
Actually, a little off comment, I saw this great picture. It's got a picture of Stephen Harper next to Chad Kroeger, and it says, remember, a vote for Stephen Harper is a vote for Nickelback. Figure they lose the next election for sure.
Yeah. This is a message brought to you by the Liberal Party of Canada.
More likely the NDP, who is now the official opposition.
Okay. I don't follow politics. Like, I don't care. Yeah.
Oh, you have Keanu Reeves, too, to add to your impressive collection of actors.
Hey, it was in that one good movie in I was in that one arguably two good movies.
But Nathan Fillion.
Ah, yes. Nathan Fillion.
Fair enough.
Yes. Say all you want about Canada, but remember, Nathan motherfucking Fillion.
And Ryan Gosling, apparently.
I did not know that.
And Ryan Reynolds, who's busy destroying every comic book movie he can get his hands on.
Well, he was all right as Deadpool. He wasn't actually that bad.
He's a comic fan, and anyone who is actually a comic fan would take one look at that script and then set it on fire.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the script. I am just...
You haven't seen Wolverine Origins?
Oh god, that is a shit show. I like saw the work print before it actually came out, and oh god, it was so horrible.
Yeah, now I'm gonna say that movie did destroy Deadpool, but it wasn't Ryan Reynolds' fault.
Yeah, like,
no, he just took part in it. He sat back and watched.
Yeah,
good point.
Yeah, but it's like, hey, Green Lantern was just, yeah, that was Green Lantern, all right.
And Blade 3, yeah. Again, he wasn't terrible in that, but he still took part in it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm guessing that's kind of one of those bet things, like, hey, I'll pay you, like, $200 to go and sit down and watch Two Girls, One Cup.
Hey, man, I'll pay you $1,000 if you go and be in Blade 3.
It's like, make it $2,000, you got a deal.
Let's see, who else have we got here? We've got, Hayden Christensen. Shit, you played.
Oh god,
what's his face? Anakin.
My brain is now kicking the back of
my
skull.
Thanks for that, by the way.
Oh, and don't forget that Jumper was filmed in Peterborough.
Oh, good lord, right.
You know, I actually quite liked Jumper. I'm ashamed to admit.
Something
about it just worked.
I went through a stage of really liking it and then really disliking it. If I watch it now, I would probably be all right with it.
It's basically a kind of superhero origin film. Like,
yeah.
If you put him in a cape, it would have worked as a superhero film.
Yeah. I would just, one thing I would really like to see with like superhero movies is just making someone who has superpowers but just doesn't give a fuck.
Like Hancock, I guess.
Hancock started out not giving a fuck, then became a superhero. I'm talking about a guy who like starts out as a normal guy, gets superpowers, fucks around with him for a little while, and then just says, fuck it.
Oh, what was that that new film, the kind of it's all shot in shaky cam, it has kids who get superpowers.
Chronicle?
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's kind of similar to that concept.
Kind of. Like, I don't want to spoil it, but it does kind of fall into a weird... It's not just kids who don't really give a fuck. It's a messed up kid who gets superpowers and then tries to avenge stuff. Like I'm talking about, like... You ever read the comic Dan the Unharmable?
No.
It's about a guy who... So it's about like a guy named Dan. I'm pretty sure he's like some kind of homeless vagrant or something. He has like super strength. He's completely invulnerable, and he kind of just doesn't care. Like he spends all of his time just like hanging out in the park, listening to fucking like 80s rock, and like people do try to like come up and like fuck with him. And he ends up like killing him and walking away. Like, huh? Then walks away. He really doesn't care. And that's what they want to see, just like a guy with superpowers who keeps trying to get thrown into this like really insane situation, and he just like trying to do everything he can to just distance himself from it as far as he can. Like he has I could fly through the sky, I have like heat vision and shit. Like if Superman just wanted to be a reporter and not Superman, you know, just. He's just like hanging out doing his shit, you know, just flying around the sky, reading some more paper, drinking his coffee, and then like as he lands, someone comes up and is like, "Dude, I need your help." He's like, "No, fuck off, I'm busy." But then everyone starts like falling around, like starts shooting him and stuff. It's like, "Ugh, god damn it!" Blows the car, walks away, and then the crew's like, "No, wait, please help me." It's like, "Fuck off, dude! I'm trying to read." And that's just the entire movie of him doing everything he can to just not get involved. I feel like that would be real good.
So I'm going to distract from this topic for a moment and go to the chat.
Please do, please.
Tiger Claw just pointed out that Scott Pilgrim was set in Canada.
True, and written by Canadian and starring Canadians.
Yeah, unfortunately the one Canadian they put in it sucked.
He was good.
And I've ranted about this
before. Oh, is that little twerp they... cast as the main character Canadian.
They cast everyone perfectly in Scott Pilgrim. Except Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, well, they really changed Scott Pilgrim for that movie, I think.
Well, he's a difficult character to pull off, because when you look at the character, he's actually, like, an irritating little shit.
Yeah.
And they took someone, and they cast someone who was also an irritating little shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of combined to create this incredibly irritating shit.
Yeah.
And I think I spent the entire film just staring at Sarah's face, hating him.
When I was watching the movie, it seemed just like, hey guys, I'm Michael Cera, but I can punch dudes. But when I was reading the comic, I got more of like, hey, I'm an oblivious kind of an oblivious idiot who ends up hurting everyone around me, and I also punch dudes. Like,
it's very difficult to imagine Michael Cera actually hurting somebody.
Yeah, it really is. But you did get to see a good chunk of that movie just him getting beaten the fuck around and getting stabbed. So that was awesome.
Mm. Personally, I didn't care for the film particularly. It's incredibly popular, but I love the comic books. It just didn't work.
Yeah, they started filming that before the books were actually done.
Oh, that's why it all gets kind of weird towards the end then.
Yeah, like... Probably the best thing, probably the best change for that movie from the comic books was the Katanagi brothers fight. Because, like, in the comics, all he did was just, like, he went to a party, then a robot would show up, then the twins would hit on Ramona, then Scott would beat the robot, and then the twins would leave. And that was it. But in the comics, it's just, like, this huge, weird, fucking, like, smoke dragon and electric yeti fight over a crowd of people while awesome music plays in the background.
Music by Beck, actually, so I believe.
Yeah.
For this kind of Canadian perfect storm they were going for.
Yeah. I mean, it's all taking place in Toronto, and they do have just pizzas everywhere. I'm actually surprised they didn't have a Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
I am legitimately surprised that when, Scott's sister didn't work at a Tim Hortons.
actually, interesting thing I noticed is more of the... In the comic book, I actually recognized more places from Toronto than I did in the movie, which was actually in Toronto. Like, I was reading the comic book, and they're sending this sushi place. They gave it a different name. I'm like, that's Sushi Queen. I've been there.
Free advertising.
They changed the name of it for the comic, but I'm like, no, that is totally, that's exactly what the shop looks like. Mm-hmm. That looks like, you know, the right type of street for it to be on. The interior looks the same. They serve with the same sushi boats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another couple things that were weird about the movie was the sword, was like when he got the power of love, the power of like self-awareness or self-conscious something, and Negascot. Those things felt really rushed in the movie. Like, I know in the comic he got the, like, the power of love thing, I think, around the fourth fight. And then, like, before he was going to fight Gideon, he went into the woods and met Negascot, who was actually, like, a character up to that point. It wasn't just, like, oh man, I'm terrible at fighting this Nega Ninja guy on the fucking video game. Then, oh hey, here's Negascot. It's, no, like, there's actually a bit where he's, like, in the shower, he's, like, wiping out the beard. You just see Negascot in the mirror staring at him, smiling.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons Negascot got thrown in there is because they used that video game to explain why he can fight. Which they did in the comics with one line. Yeah, yeah. Scott's the best fighter in the province.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, that was just boom, go. And I also, and actually, I did really like the fight in the comics when he was fighting Matthew Patel. Where just like all his friends come along and they just like shoot fireballs out of their hands. Just group Hadouken or something.
When you think about it, he's actually probably such an effective fighter because he's fucking mental.
Yeah.
Like, it's heavily implied that when he fought that guy on the rooftop over Kim Pine, mm-hmm. that he was just beating up some dude and hallucinating. When you think about it, that's actually really fucking dark.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like none of this is actually happening. None of the evil Lexus things are happening. He's just finding random dudes and beating the fuck out of them.
Yeah, it's about a boyfriend beating up someone's his girlfriend's ex-boyfriends.
Like, what if it's not even that? It was just like somebody it's she just met.
Random people.
No, it's like just friends of hers. Like, oh hey man, I'm Matt. It's like Ramona just introduced you. Just goes and starts beating the fuck out of him, lights him on fire. And like the demon hipster chicks are just like bartenders in the club trying to get him off. It's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
And come to think of it, he just killed them, doesn't he? That's kind of...
Yeah.
Like, and Ramona doesn't give a fuck.
No, he kills them, then mugs them.
Yeah, mugs them and steals their money.
No, that's all he says, is just mugging. Like, he's not even in a band. He's just walking the streets mugging people and stalking a chick. You know, when he's fighting Knives' dad, Knives is just, like, some girl that gave him a dollar one time. It's like, oh, you're nice, but I'm not really good. I want to stalk her. And Knives' dad is just like, there's like, huh. It's like, oh, hey, you're the man that gave my daughter that money. Then just like starts attacking him. That would be a much better, that would be a much more interesting comic, I think.
I think you're taking it a bit too extremes, but if you explore the idea a bit more that it's all hallucinations, then...
It is kind of implied that he's not, like, all there.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it is obviously kind of in-universe magic and that kind of stuff, but... Mm-hmm. Like, it is outright stated that he was hallucinating, like, he was tripping balls when he fought that first guy. who wasn't fighting back, which is kind of grim.
Yeah, and, like, the power of love and the power of self-awareness, they're just actually just swords. They're not magic anything, he just went out and bought a sword. Yeah. Like the ending of that fight, like, when he goes inside, like, Gideon's head or whatever, that does seem like something you would trip out on. It's like, take that one hit of acid, it's like, oh, dude, I'm inside your head. That would be real cool. Well, I had a good amount of time. So... You guys talk about anything else, or shall we move on to some news that I have here? Because I have news today.
Well, let's move on to the news for now. I'm sure we'll think of some more topics to talk about.
Okay.
Unless you've got something, Gray.
No, news sounds good.
Okay, so, this is our new feature. News of the... So this is going to be news that, for one reason or another, we didn't write an article about. Either that we found it interesting, but either didn't get around to it, or just filled with white hot nerd rage, or we just couldn't. Like, it didn't fit into anything that we write about. So, starting out with, Forbes has named their newest highest paid actress, with a total net worth of $34.5 billion, it's Kristen Stewart. Yep. So, Kristen
Stewart. She's the one who looks like a chipmunk, isn't she?
Yep, she's the one from Twilight.
The one who shows no emotion whatsoever.
Yeah. The two people that she knocked off from their number one spot were Angelina Jolie and Sarah Jessica Parker.
To be fair, they were both fucking talentless too.
Angelina Jolie is okay.
That's a bit harsh. Parker is occasionally funny.
Bobby, is that you?
Yeah, sorry, my headphones didn't work there for a minute.
Okay.
And I defaulted to speaker.
Last year, Jolie and Parker were, like, at the top with an estimated $30 million each. In that time, Jolie dropped to number 4 with only $20 million, and Sarah Jessica Parker dropped to 7th with only $15
million. That's terrible. How do you live on $15
million? I know, it's just... You get used to a certain way of living.
Yeah.
And then just, all gone. But yeah. So, moving on. Don Grady, who was who's one of the stars of My Three Sons and one of the original Mouseketeers, has died.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my, how will I ever go on?
I know. See, there's a reason we don't write articles about these news pieces. Yeah. So he's dead. Had cancer. He was 86. He was 68.
That's unfortunate, but yeah. I have no idea who he is.
So, moving on. The Last of Us will not have a co-op story campaign.
Does it have, like, co-op in, like, other modes?
This does not say.
Because if it does, why the fuck do people keep on doing that?
Yeah, like, I could, like, there are some people who could see, like, the, like, Last of Us working with co-op thing because, like, you're always rolling around with two people. But I don't really see it working that well because, yeah, you could have, like, the one person, I feel like the girl in support, in, like, a support role, but then it would just, like, be one guy just doing all the awesome stuff while the other guy's playing this little girl and just sitting there with a brick waiting to throw it at somebody. Like, can I do it?
I mean, to be honest, I can't imagine it working all that well with co-op. I wasn't expecting co-op in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Though the fact they say, hey, it's not going to have co-op kind of implies that it might have had co-op at one point.
Yeah. But apparently it does have multiplayer.
Why the fuck did they put multiplayer in it?
Yeah, game director Bruce Straley said that we are supporting multiplayer with The Last of Us. We're not ready to talk about the details of how multiplayer will be implemented. However, we can say that it is not co-op within the main campaign.
So it's either going to be a horde mode or a really, really bad deathmatch mode.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So the multiplayer that everything else has.
Yeah.
Essentially. I mean, have any of you played Uncharted's multiplayer?
No, I don't have a PS3.
Neither do I.
Oh, it's, yeah. that's kind of it.
Yeah, it seems to be the thing, like, this game does not, like, I feel like if they put, like, putting multiplayer into something like The Last of Us, it'll get into a similar situation with what Dead Space did. Of just, like, kind of detracting some stuff. Because, remember, like, Dead Space 1 was great. Dead Space 2, it was pretty damn good. But then there was the multiplayer, which was functional but completely unnecessary.
I think all that did was knock down its scores.
Yeah, like...
If Dead Space 2 had just had the single player component, I think Dead Space 2 was actually one of the best games of last year.
Yeah, like, I remember when we did a review back when Donnie Grimm was actually still doing reviews for us. We reviewed, like, the single player and the multiplayer completely separately.
Yeah, it's a good idea, because the multiplayer was just, like... It wasn't bad, but it just... Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't anything remotely worthwhile.
He was like, hey, you guys like Left 4 Dead? Well, let's put some, like, knockoff Left 4 Dead thing here in Dead Space. That'll be good enough.
And, like, the core mechanics aren't tight enough for that to work. It was dumb. It was like putting Deathmatch in Resident Evil. That was retarded.
Yeah. Yeah, and now we have, now like with Dead Space 3, it's like saying, fuck all nonsense of story. Here's a black guy to roll around with.
Now, okay, I'm still kind of holding out hope for Dead Space 3, even though kind of every video I've seen seems to make it seem less interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think co-op is inherently going to kind of make it less scary or make it less of a horror game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it's done right, it could work really well, but I haven't seen anything to indicate that it is going to be done right.
Yeah. And EA has said that they're like, EA said that they're going to be saying that from now on, all of our games are going to try to reach a much broader audience by being like just kind of action. Like they're not going to be trying to get any kind of niche appeal with just survival horror stuff. It's going to be action with some scary shit in it.
Well, yeah, they're saying that they want to push for 5 million sales.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
It's like, fucking retarded.
Dead Space 2 hit. Dead Space 2 was amazing and it hit 2 million. Dead Space 3 isn't going to hit 5 million, no matter how generic they make it.
Yeah, it's like the only way I could see it hitting 5 million is if they threw in like a free copy with the purchase of every other EA game.
Yeah,
I was like, hey,
it's just not gonna, the IP doesn't have that much appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so moving on, Nintendo has said that they will not be making any more 3DS models because it would confuse gamers.
Yes, they fucking will.
Yes, so apparently, Nintendo. Oh. So, Satoru Iwata said that after the 3DS XL, they have no plans to release any new models of the system, and that apparently decision was based in part on an estimation that consumers would be confused if there were too many choices.
Bullshit.
I can understand thinking, oh, the guy's going to get confused because, you know, like, Nintendo's core demographic is, like, what, 12?
Yeah, and parents, so explaining the DSi to them was pretty different. That didn't stop it from selling, like, crazy, though.
Yeah, just because it's fucking DS. It's got Nintendo on. It's got Nintendo on the thing. It's going to sell like hotcakes.
Oh, I still imagine somewhere down the line they're going to put a second stick on one and sell it.
But if they do that, they won't be able to keep selling the fucking circle pad hang-on thing.
Oh god, I've actually got one of those. And it's like the XL. The XL is too big for the current one.
Yes, yeah, so they can make it a new one.
So their plan is just to make a bigger one.
Yes.
It's already fucking huge.
Yeah. How many batteries does the thing run on right now?
I think it only uses two double A's. I think, but it lasts like forever.
Okay, so I'm guessing the next one's going to be running on, like, 2 Ds.
Yeah.
This fucking shit in there is going to be, like, 20 pounds.
It's
going to come with legs.
You said 2 AA's, like, it's pretty small for just an add-on, but that's an add-on to your already existing
console
handheld gaming device,
yeah,
so...
It's actually not that bad if you've got giant fucking massive hands like me. Hmm. It actually makes it a lot more comfortable to hold.
But
it is ugly as sin.
Yeah, and again, like, most, like, Nintendo's core demographic, they don't really have the giant hands.
They don't have giant hands, yeah.
Yes, they like, struggle to be able to hold on to the thing just regular.
Oh, like, and the sticks are horrible. Yeah. That weird slidey pad.
Yeah, it's like the PSP one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, moving on. There have been two new images released of some movies coming out. So, first up, we have one of Vin Diesel as Riddick, implying that there's going to be a new Riddick movie. And the second one is Tyler Perry as homicide detective / psychologist Alex Cross. So, this is a role that was popularized by Morgan Freeman. So, now Tyler Perry of Madea fame is going to be stepping in the shoes of Alex Cross.
I'm sorry, no, you cannot replace Morgan Freeman with anybody, especially not Tyler Perry.
No, you cannot. Yeah, so this is apparently for a new movie with the tagline, "Don't ever cross Alex Cross."
Really?
Yep.
That's the actual tagline. That's not someone's made up to take the piss.
It's on the poster.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. And I'm not even entirely sure if the poster is real. Like, I got this on Collider. So it's got Tyler Perry in it as the guy and Matthew Fox from Lost as the bad guy. So here's a synopsis. Alex Cross follows the young homicide detective slash psychologist, Tyler Perry, from the worldwide best-selling novels by James Patterson as he meets his match in a serial killer. The two face off in a high-stakes game of cat and mouse, but when the mission gets personal, Cross is pushed to the edge of his moral and psychological limits in this taut and exciting action thriller. Alex Cross is coming out October 19th. Oh, good lord, I can't believe this is a thing.
I can't believe there's going to be another Riddick movie.
I know, dude. It's insane. Like,
I actually quite liked Riddick.
I know. Like, Riddick is a cool. Like, Riddick is a cool character. Like, Pitch Black was awesome. Chronicles of Riddick wasn't as awesome, but it was tolerable to me.
Chronicles of Riddick was trying to be a kind of modern Flash Gordon, almost.
Yeah, kind of.
That kind of massive, ridiculous sci-fi epic kind of thing, which is actually quite a brave thing to release, you know, mm-hmm. in this kind of movie climate. It was kind of fairly stupid at points, but I liked it.
Yeah, but then, like, after that, they went to direct-to-video animated movie. It just...
directed by Peter Chung, I think. Unless I'm mistaken.
I have no idea. I never watched it, but it just seems like when you go from, like, indie, like a little kind of independent thing, wasn't released at any theaters, to huge, massive, like, wide-release thing, to straight-to-video home movie.
Yeah, but, like, the dude who did Aeon Flux, the original kind of cartoon series.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, it's a step down in terms of revenue, but, like, in terms of, like, artistic merit,
yeah.
Anything by Chung is usually fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not talking about artistic merit or anything, like, Pitch Black wasn't exactly what you'd call high art.
No.
But I'm talking about, like, yeah, cult classic to main wide stream, main, like, huge mainstream wide thing to just a straight-to-video thing. It just seems like going from, like, right, so you take a step up, you take a step down. These take another huge step back up. It's a very weird kind of release pattern for those movies.
Well, it's supposed to be, it's kind of, Vin Diesel's brainchild, isn't it?
It's his kind yeah. of... It's his baby. It's the reason he founded the game studio. Because he founded the fucking game studio to make video games.
Yeah. I guess my only comment on the series, having seen both Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick, is that it really made a jump there between those two movies. I mean, in the first one, you've got, he's a criminal, he's a murderer, but he's the guy who's going to help you survive in this situation.
Yeah.
In the second movie, you've got, well, he's alien Jesus.
Yeah, kind of.
Which was hilarious. And yeah. All of his dialogue was fucking hilarious. There's one moment where he sits there and he says entirely seriously that he's not afraid of the dark. The dark is afraid of him.
Yeah.
And whoever wrote that must have been shitting their fucking pants.
Yeah. And, like, what was up with the main bad guy's powers? It's like, oh, hey, you can see where I'm going before I get there. And, like, I have no idea how you make that guy, like, an imposing evil force. It's like, hey, guess what? I will know where you'll be at any given time. Because guess what? I can stab you in the face. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, the only reason Riddick knew where to stab was because the guy did his weird liquid teleport thing.
Well, it does allow him to move faster, right? So, you see the movement, but then, you know, it's faster than you would be normally moving, so it would be harder to track.
No, like the thing that makes him faster, like, it just moves him faster to that position. After it gets there, he's moving at normal speed.
Yeah, no, I get that, but he's still able to move between place and place faster than a normal person by doing that.
Yes, so but he's able to move there faster by telling you, like, the thing that collapses, the thing teleports there, shows you where he's going to be for, like, 5 seconds, and then he moves there. It's just, yeah. And so Tiger Claw says, you guys heard that Tyler Perry wants to make a sci-fi movie? because apparently he wants to make a sci-fi movie. It's Medea, a mad black woman in space. But yeah, moving on. So, I'm just going to read this title for you guys, and tell me if you guys want to talk about this. So, this is from the DC Source blog. It's 5.2 Reasons We Love the First Round of Before Watchmen.
Well, from what you've told me, I haven't read any of it myself, but from what you've told me, the first round of Before Watchmen isn't something to fall in love with.
Definitely not. Like, I just read Night Owl. I just read Night Owl issue 1, and that's probably been my favorite one so far.
I would say the only reason to like them is they're not pan-shittingly terrible as they first as you thought they would be.
They're still some of them are still pretty bad. Like the comedian one was just oh god, the comedian.
I mean, I've only read I think it was Night Owl number 1, which was all right.
Yeah, that's probably been the best one I've read so far.
But nothing, like, amazing. Like,
yeah, I know. Like, I have... So far, they've released Minutemen, The Comedian, Silk Spectre, and Night Owl, I think. I think they've only... and The Comedian. So they've released 5 of them so far. They still have a couple more to go with, I think, Ozymandias, Rorschach, and I'm not sure if they're doing Dr. Manhattan. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they have on here 5.2 reasons why DC thinks that the first round of Watchmen before Watchmen is good. And so I'm just gonna read off the lists. I'm just gonna read off like the names of the things, and if you guys want me to elaborate on them, I will. So starting out with number 1, Darwin Cook. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, elaborate on that one.
Pardon?
Elaborate on that one, if you would.
Okay, so, Darwin Cook wrote and illustrated one of the most fan-favorite comics of all time, the amazingly beautiful period piece, DC The New Frontier. With Before Watchmen and Minutemen, Cook returns to both creative double duty and the 1940s, 1950s era. Golden Age greatness really resonates well with the romanticized style of the tone of the time period, and Cook captures the sentiment perfectly. And Minutemen isn't the only Before Watchmen book Cook is writing. He's also co-scripting Silk Spectre with artist Amanda Connor, and speaking of which... Then it moves on to number 2, which is Amanda Connor drawing Silk Spectre. So yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're saying, hey, Darwin Cook wrote a great thing about the 40s and 50s. Now he's back in the 40s and 50s. But yeah. So I read Minutemen. I didn't really like it. Like, it had some interesting stuff, but, like, the comedian was shit in it. Cat Metropolis, every single thing about his entire career was luck. He just happened to get out of the military service right when the superhero boom started. He just happened to get a secret base that had his initials printed on it for cheap. There just happened to be, like, a dozen superheroes within driving distance of his secret lair. Yeah, but... Yeah. Yeah, so, moving on. Number 2. Amanda Connor drawing Silk Spectre. And I have to say, I agree with this one. Silk Spectre probably has one of the best art styles, like, one of the bestly drawn things in that comic, in the series so far, and I fucking loved it. Amanda Connor can fucking draw.
Amanda Connor did The Pro, right? With Ennis?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and she's good.
I love The Pro. It was fucking hilarious.
I like The Pro, too. Yeah.
Just seeing the Superman clone just saying, fuck you guys. I really do. I really like seeing Superman get changed, because I do not like Superman. Like, just standard-ass Superman, I've said this before, I fucking hate him. But yeah. So, moving on, number 3. Set up to the punchline.
You're gonna have to elaborate, that's pretty...
Yeah, I know. So, the ironically named comedian stands as one of the most deplorable characters in Watchmen. He's a tough character to approach, but if there's one person more confident can pull it off, it's writer Brian Azzarello. With the first issue, he's already laying fascinating groundwork into the history of the character and the history of the world, such as the comedian's involvement with the Kennedys and a certain blonde bombshell, which, fuck them.
Now, to be fair, if anyone could do the kind of ridiculous machismo-laden kind of macho bullshit that the comedian kind of represents, it would be Azzarello.
Yep, but
who's made a fucking career out of doing that kind of shit.
Yeah, but like while the comedian is very, you know, like the machismo shit, he's also fucking insane.
And Azzarello has done characters. I mean, if you've read 100 Bullets.
I've read some of that, but
it's kind of, it's all about characters who are kind of ridiculously macho, but also kind of likable.
But like, this is not that. Like, this comedian, when I read this comic, it was not the comedian I come to know. Like, so in the comics, like even in the movie, like the original comics, it was heavily implied, and in the movie just straight out shown that the comedian killed Kennedy. Right?
Yes,
like in the comics, Dr. Manhattan implied that comedian shot Kennedy. In the movie, like during the opening thing, you see the comedian with a rifle on the grassy knoll fucking shooting Kennedy in the head. In the comic, the comedian isn't even in the same state as Kennedy when he's shot. You know, he just at a bar looking on the news like, oh my god, Kennedy's dead. Just fucking up their own timeline. And there's only one moment in there that I really felt this was kind of comedian. So, I guess spoiler warning for Comedian issue 1, but it's been out for a while, so fuck it. So, Mrs. Kennedy, Mrs. JFK, she asked the comedian to kill Marilyn Monroe. And he did, after fucking her. And then as he's leaving, he kisses her on her ass cheek, gets dressed, and walks out. That was the one moment where it's just like, oh yeah. And then there was the whole fucking fighting scene with him bursting in, like, so he was contracted by like these guys to go help deal with like some help go deal with a Moloch, because yeah, Moloch. And they're saying like, all right, so what we're gonna be doing is we're gonna go in like clearing out the middle of the guys. You just come in at the end and do any kind of cleanup work. And the kid just like, fuck that, grabs the guy's leg, slams it down on the gas pedal, drives to the front door, just fucking murks everybody. That is some comedian-ness for you, but it still wasn't enough. Yeah. So, moving on. Joe, number 4, Joe and Andy Kubert. Elaboration?
Yes, please. Over.
Okay, so, legacy plays a big role in the DC Universe, and before Watchmen, Night Owl directly reflects on that idea. So, what better artistic team than the real-life father-son duo of legendary Joe and Andy Kubert? A legacy done by legacy artists. It's meta-mazing.
Did they actually write that, meta-mazing?
Yes.
Fuck them.
Yes. Okay, so, number 5. The past is present. I'm guessing, yeah. So, one of the most fun aspects of Before Watchmen is the subtle references to the series makes to the original graphic novel. Here are two awesome examples from Silk Spectre and Night Owl. Be sure to keep an eye out. So, with that one, it's just... Remember in the like, beginning of the comic when you just see like the comedian being... get the fuck beat out of him and stuff, and you see like the blood coming out of his nose being held up by like his collar? They did a scene similar to that where Silk Spectre's fighting somebody. Where she has blood coming out of her nose and being held up by her collar.
Oh, wow.
You get it?
It's deep.
I know, bro.
It's retroactive foreshadowing for a character who's not going to experience that.
Yep. Yeah. So, moving on to 5.1. Jim Lee variant color covers.
Alright, I'm looking at these now, and these are quite cool.
Yeah, they are really good covers, but one thing is weird, like, comedian's cover, it looks like it's like a German porn stash. It's really
weird.
Yeah,
actually, that's a good point. Yeah. And Silk Spectre is looking a bit kind of...
she looks a bit drunk.
Jim Lee-ish, to be honest. Like.
And as awesome as variant covers are, they're covers. They're not what the issue is.
Yeah. Well, and then 5.2. The entire thing gets us excited for what's next, which is Ozymandias, Rorschach, and Dr. Manhattan.
Well, Rorschach's going to be the main pull, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. He's pretty much the Batman of Watchmen.
And let's be honest, they're probably going to make that as obvious and heavy-handed as possible.
Yeah.
Like, the funny thing is about this is Alan Moore created Watchmen as a parody and as kind of like a satire on what people thought was cool.
Yeah.
And it's in reality, he's like an appalling character.
Oh, yeah.
And then everyone goes, oh, you know, Rorschach's fucking awesome. He should get his own series. And Moore was always like, you know, you're kind of missing the point.
Yeah. Like, Rorschach, I love Rorschach because he is fucking insane. But he does not need his own series. Like, we talked about this on our comics book podcast, but everything that we need to know about the Watchmen, everything we need to know about all their backstories and everything, was perfectly encapsulated within Watchmen itself. We don't need all this extra. We don't need all this extraneous bullshit.
Well, and the point was, it kind of Moore's very good at kind of giving you a tantalizing glimpse of what goes on, without kind of like. Without driving it into the ground. There's only so many times you could watch Rorschach punch someone in the face.
Yeah. And you don't even see him do that much. Like, there are a couple times where he punches him in the face, but other than that, it's just like, fucking, I'm gonna shoot you, and then meat cleaver in the face.
Like, a lot of it is more kind of tales about what Rorschach has done.
Yeah.
Like, it's the difference between having characters reference that time he threw a guy down an elevator shaft, which is funny.
Yeah.
And showing him throwing someone down an elevator shaft. And I imagine this comic's gonna do the latter.
Yeah, like, I'm just wondering when it's actually gonna take place, because, like, we saw some Rorschach as a kid where he, like, ripped a dude's ear off with his teeth. Then we saw him in, like, his middle-aged thing where he's, like, a bit more balanced, and then the whole Kitty Genovese thing happens. And then we have him when he was whatever his face is pretending to be Rorschach. Like, so I'm just wondering what point in his story is everything's gonna happen like that.
Hopefully the earlier periods, back when he was kind of more weird than badass.
Back when his like mom was a whore.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing. It's kind of implied that before he kind of came across that dead girl, that he was kind of a more balanced superhero, like costumed hero. I wouldn't mind seeing that, but it's still not particularly necessary at all.
Yeah. And, like, we are getting some of that with what happens in Night Owl. We do see, like, the beginning things of their partnership, and I'm not sure if, like, they partnered up before or after Rorschach went bonkers.
I'm gonna hedge my bets with before.
Okay.
Although he was solo.
I do remember seeing them, like, shaking hands and stuff. And being kind of... Yeah, I think it was before when he was working with Night Owl.
Hmm. Yeah, like, and to be fair, like in Night Owl, those two, I do feel like they work well together. Like they are both sides of Batman.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a fun dynamic there, which was explored very well in Watchmen.
Yeah.
We really don't need more of that.
Yeah. So what we're saying here is read Watchmen, fuck before Watchmen. Oh, but actually, I want to get your thoughts on this, Gray. So, the pirate story.
You know, I've always skipped the fucking pirate stories.
Yeah,
like, Black Freighter bored the shit out of me.
Yeah, but, like, at least in the original Watchmen, there was a point for it to be there of just, hey, these are characters who are kind of important to the story, hanging out, there's a guy reading a comic. But in Before Watchmen, it's just, hey, guess what? Pirate story, go! No rhyme or reason.
It's kind of a fairly obvious attempt at kind of getting the same legitimacy that the original Watchmen had.
It is shameless.
Yeah.
It is just, oh good lord.
And the same goes for the callback panels that they were talking about earlier, where it's like, oh, this panel resembles this other panel.
It's like, hey guys, remember this? Remember this?
And kind of, it just seems a bit desperate to me. Mm-hmm. And like, to be fair, Watchmen did hinge quite heavily on recurring visual themes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the smiley face thing happens all the fucking time.
Yeah.
But it was quite clever when Moore did it. Now it's just kind of like,
yeah. 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 Oh, well. Moving on. So, someone has developed spray-on batteries.
Awesome.
This is the greatest invention ever.
Yeah. So, I haven't actually gotten a chance to read the story. But, so... This is from The Escapist, so I'm just going to be reading it verbatim. So, in an article published in Scientific Reports, a team from Rice University in Texas demonstrated their technique for using existing spray paint equipment to spray rechargeable 0.5mm thick batteries onto a variety of surfaces, including ceramic, glass, and steel plates. So yeah, they made fucking spray on batteries.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Just like, oh man, my phone's dead. Just pull a little spray can. Hello? Good. So, okay, moving on from that. Science. So I'm just going to be reading this. This is another thing from The Escapist. I'm going to be reading headline verbatim. Science renders breathing obsolete. Oxygen can now be delivered via syringe or IV. So, yeah. Apparently, a team of researchers from Boston Children's Hospital had developed a technique to directly inject oxygen into blood veins and be able to restore regular blood oxygen levels within seconds. Yeah.
Bypassing the lungs. That's actually very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, all right? So I'm guessing at some point, people are just going to be finding ways to just hook yourself up to an IV and then just sit there and don't breathe or do anything. It's a great way to be lazy.
I wonder if you'd still have the desire to breathe, though.
That's the weird thing. I'm guessing this is just for, people with, respiratory issues or something. Possibly. Or, dudes who are, on respirators of just... Hey, instead of having this huge bulky machine, you just put a little needle in their arm and go. But, yeah. So,
moving on. The measure could very easily be used to help a person who, say, had been not breathing for a while and CPR didn't deliver enough oxygen. You could reoxygenate the blood that way. Or someone who had been drowning.
Yeah.
That seems like a practical application.
Yeah. So, moving on. For the piece of comic news that is just fucking absurd, Spider-Man is getting a sidekick.
Oh, dear God, no.
Yes. So, a while ago, Marvel released his teaser image said, who is Alpha? Apparently, Alpha is a 15-year-old kid named Andy Maguire, who, after getting zapped or something by one of Peter Parker's inventions during a tour of Horizon Labs, gets superpowers and becomes Alpha, Spider-Man's sidekick.
That was a terrible name.
Kill it.
Yeah. So, to celebrate Spider-Man's 50th anniversary, they're giving Spider-Man a young little piece of shit. The Spider-Men thing, that is cool. That is, a 50th anniversary type thing. But don't give him a sidekick. No, please, no.
Yeah, this isn't gonna work.
So, Marvel Editor-in-Chief Alonso, Axel Alonso, when asked why on God's horrible green earth would somebody do something like this, he said, part of it is that Spider-Man is grown up. He's older, more seasoned, but young at heart. He's still a young man, but he's been around. It's interesting because it flips the paradigm. Teen hero Spider-Man is now responsible for this teen hero sidekick. He's responsible because one of his inventions caused this kid to get his powers. He's directly responsible for the responsibility this kid now has with his new power. He feels he has a responsibility to make sure this kid walks the right path, which won't prove easy. So he's responsible. Okay.
When you think about it, the Spider-Man, he's obviously done something incredibly fucking dangerous and turned this kid into, proto-Spider-Man or whatever.
Yeah.
His response to that is to take him out to fight crime.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it doesn't even say what his power set is.
Hopefully he's bulletproof, otherwise that's not going
to... Yeah, unless he has his own version of Spider-Sense or is bulletproof, I doubt... this kid's going to get fucking dead. Or he's just going to end up getting Spider-Man dead. Because, Spider-Man has this whole thing of no one dies. That's his new thing. So, deciding to take a 15-year-old kid who just got new powers, who's not entirely sure what his powers is yet, just out there to fight fucking, I don't know, Vulture and a zombie Dr. Octopus, I guess. But yeah.
Sorry, I have to argue something in the chat. Everyone's saying that Miles Morales is Spider-Man, so since he's the minority, he won't be the main hero, so the sidekick will do all the work. Peter Parker's still around, idiots. Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker died, and Miles Morales is Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, we're talking
about... Wait, did you just respond to a racist joke by saying it wasn't kind of using the correct law?
Yes.
Yes.
It's like, okay,
if you know about Miles Morales, then you should be following the Spider-Man lore enough to know that there's two different universes. I mean...
Yeah, like Spider-Man...
If you're going to argue Miles Morales.
Yeah, Spider-Man is all about new Peter Parker and, like, old Peter Parker and Miles Morales. That's the good 50th anniversary thing. This is the stupid 50th anniversary thing with just regular-ass Spider-Man. And, yeah, Spider-Man doesn't need a sidekick. Okay, he's not Batman. He doesn't need, like, the young, brash youth jumping around making jokes so they can balance out his, like, fucking sociopathic grimness.
I always thought the idea of Spider-Man was he was kind of antisocial. Like, a bit of a rule breaker and kind of a lone wolf kind of character.
Kind of, yeah. He's part of the Avengers, but he doesn't do... he's more of just, I'm swinging around Manhattan and punch muggers.
Like, he's always been very much about doing his own thing. Yeah. And, like, every fucking character arc is dealing with him dealing with responsibility.
Yeah.
So I don't really see why this is new.
Maybe because now he's responsible for a kid? Like, I don't know, they're...
Prediction, this kid's going to get mulched on his first time out, and then Spider-Man's going to have to deal with the guilt.
Yep, just another thing onto the pile. It's probably going to be the kid's...
Yeah, he's got a pretty big pile of corpses following him.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be the kid's fault, too. Like, that's always the thing with Spider-Man, is that everything he feels guilty about, it's something that he can't really help. Like, aside from Gwen Stacy, everything he feels guilty about is something that involved him in no real way. Like, something that he couldn't possibly know would happen.
Well, they do that with comic books all the time. It's a very cheap way of developing a character.
Yeah.
To make them guilty for something that they're not really responsible for.
Yeah, but it's like...
It kind of gives them the appearance of death, but in reality, they're not making any wrong choices.
Yeah, in reality, they're just bitches.
Yeah. Though, to be fair, they have done a little bit with Spider-Man during Civil War.
Yeah.
Where he quite clearly chose the wrong side.
Yeah, he actually... In Civil War, he actually did switch sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, him revealing himself did give him a reason for guilt when Aunt May got shot. You know, because that is actually a complete thing. It's like, if he didn't reveal his identity, no one would know who he is, so Aunt May wouldn't have got fucking shot. And then he wouldn't have sold his marriage to Satan. Because, yeah, he did that.
I must say, though, as for guilt and death with Spider-Man, I liked an Ultimate Spider-Man... back when it was still Peter Parker, when he dumps Mary Jane because she's too stupid and keeps getting herself in danger.
Yes, that is actually really good. Like, he doesn't want to feel guilt about her, so he's just like, fuck off. You're probably going to end up dying. It's going to be my fault because you're so stupid. Yeah. But yeah. So, Kaijido says that if the psychic was a hot chick, he'd be okay with it, but no more little boys in spandex, please. But yeah, so...
Actually, if it was a chick, it would be even worse.
Yeah, like a 15-year-old...
Let's take this 15-year-old girl, put her in spandex, and then put her out in front of a bunch of hardened criminals.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would end, you know, badly.
Yeah, like... Yeah, it's just... They're just saying, hey, you guys remember how Spider-Man got his powers? Well, here's a new kid you know absolutely nothing about. Feel bad for him. It's just so stupid. But yeah, found piece of news. This is probably going to be the one that sparks something, or not. But the Loch Ness Monster has been used to debunk evolution in state-funded schools. Yes.
Something that doesn't exist.
The first mental image is of people inviting the Loch Ness Monster to speak into public schools.
Yeah.
Like, it just fucking comes out in its hat and it's in its pipe.
Yeah. Because, hey kids, I'm Shamu's dad. I'm here to talk to you about evolution.
This actually reminds me of something I saw on The Onion recently. It's this day in history. Evolution is debunked in a courtroom when a monkey on the stand refuses to turn into a human.
So, according to this, the Eternity Christian Academy in Westlake, Louisiana...
Oh, so it's not an actual school.
It's a Christian
safe. It's a cult factory. Okay.
Yeah. So they'll be teaching kids in their science class, that Nessie is in fact a real sea creature, and that because of that, evolution can't be happening.
To be
sorry,
fair,
what you kind of cut out there for me.
The world is made by giants. But... that isn't any more retarded than anything else they teach.
You guys were kind of talking at the same time.
Oh, sorry.
So,
go ahead.
Great. No, you started. So.
I was just trying to say that I couldn't hear you exactly fully, so could you repeat what they said?
Okay, so then the whatever academy will be teaching that, in their science classes no less, that Nessie is in fact a real creature, and because Nessie exists, it disproves evolution because dinosaurs.
Okay.
Yep.
And all I was saying is that compared to the other things they believe and teach, that isn't actually all that retarded. Like, to be honest, if you're going with the whole world was made in 7 days, kind of 6 days technically, I guess, by the giant sky beard that kind of made us out of clay.
Yeah.
Believing in a magic lake monster, not really that much of a stretch.
Yeah. But still, dude, it's science class. I mean, come on. Yeah. So, I guess back with the Spider-Man thing. Tiger Claw asks, will they ever do a Spider-Man comic in which he has a son or daughter that he trains to carry the legacy? There is one. It's called Spider-Girl.
A Spider-Girl is daughter?
Yep. Mayday really? Parker.
How old is he? Is he supposed to be? I know they play fast and loose with...
This is actually taking place in an alternate universe.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so in that alternate universe... Mary Jane and Peter Parker, they're married. They're both in their 40s. The Fantastic Four is now the Fantastic Five. Mayday Parker is in high school, and she inherited her dad's spider powers. And so Peter is now teaching her how to be a spider person. And this actually carries over, because in, the main comics, during the whole clone saga retardedness, Mary Jane was actually pregnant. But... it was, implied that she had a miscarriage or that her baby was stolen by Norman Osborn. Because, honestly, what the fuck hasn't that guy done to Peter Parker recently? I mean, Jesus Christ. Ugh. Yeah.
I actually quite like the Clone Saga is when I stopped reading Spider-Man. But I enjoyed how unashamedly ridiculous it got.
Yeah. I had read some of the Clone Saga. I knew some of the stuff that happened in it, but the only actual Clone Saga I read was the Ultimate Clone Saga, which was even weirder, because apparently in that universe, Spider-Woman is a clone of Peter Parker.
Okay.
Yeah. Dr. Octopus got some DNA from Ben Reilly, who in this universe is a black guy who has no relation to Peter Parker whatsoever, who took that DNA... which, incidentally, was used by Dr. Kirk Connors to make Carnage. And then cloned Peter Parker 6 times. One of them was covered in hair. One of them had, 6 arms. One of them had a really fucked up face. One of them was a woman.
Yeah.
And one of them was the Scorpion. Because, yeah.
That makes sense.
Because, yeah, that happens.
I just love that 90s attitude towards cloning.
Yeah.
Well, that shit just happens.
Yeah. It's like, oh my god, she's dead. I perfected cloning. Yeah, that was really weird. That was really creepy, his reason for mastering cloning was because he wanted to bring Gwen Stacy back to life because he was in love with her. Oh man, I love you, but I can't be with you. Hey, I'll bring her back to life. Now fuck me. And then I'm pretty sure that, like, the clone of Gwen Stacy was, like, raped by Norman Osborn or something.
Because what hasn't he done?
Exactly. Comics are great, aren't they? I feel like that should be the next shirt, because comics. but yeah, that does it for news. I'll try to bring you guys more next week.
And I'd say it's just about time to wrap up here.
Yeah, so that's going to do it for this week. This week's edition of the DestroProds.com Anything Cast here on Local Games Radio. And we'd like to say to all you guys out there that we are currently hiring, but we can't pay you. So we are looking for people to help us with hosting duties for the Video Games Podcast, the Comic Book Podcast, as well as the Anything Cast. We are also looking for writers for games, movies, comics, anime, anything you want. And yeah, like I said, we can't offer any money, but we can give you guys PR info for video game companies. You might be able to get free games. Like, I've already gotten four of them, so. But yeah, so if you're interested in being a writer, then send a news article and a review to me, demon@destroprods.com. If you're interested in being on any of the podcasts, then record yourself with a small, like, little audio clip of you talking about, like, a game you've been playing, a comic you've been watching, a comic you've been reading, or just anything. And email that to me with your Skype name. That's important. You gotta have your Skype name on there so that if we think you guys are a good fit, then you can just, then we'll be able to contact you that way. And put the subject line application. So, again, I'll just put my email address in the chat for you guys. There you go. So, yeah, email me, deadman@destroprods.com if you're interested. If we like you, we'll contact you. If we don't, then we'll still contact you, just not on Skype. So, yeah, please, anyone, if you're looking for people, if you've ever thought about doing podcasting or, like, any kind of blogging for a living, or not a living, but just you thought about it, then please don't hesitate to contact me. We're always looking for people. And, yeah. So, as always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the site at Death the Door Prods. I am at Deadman Artist Cordelia Prods. We have at Bowie1 and at Gray the Tick. We have our store, deathstoreprods.com/store, with our new Because Japan shirt now available in fat people sizes. So, check that out. And, yeah. On Tuesday, we'll be having our video games podcast. On Thursday, our anime. And on Friday, we'll be posting our first commentary for CG Movie Month. The first movie up is going to be Tangled.
Alright.
Yeah. So, the site is currently down. The site's currently fucked up right now, so I can't upload anything to it. But I figured I'd just tell you guys the schedule right now. So, this Friday we have Tangled. Then, after that, we have Puss in Boots. Then, Monsters vs. Aliens. Then, Megamind. Those movies we're going to be watching. So, yeah. And, so yeah. Until next time, I'm the Dead Man.
I'm Bobby1.
I assume I'm supposed to chime in at this point. I'm Greg Carter.
See you guys next time.